You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hi, and welcome back. As you know, we're covering and actually preempting what's coming on May 22nd with the Deal Flow Events Discovery Day on Nuclear Energy. It's a pivotal time in the industry, a renaissance of sorts happening. And what we aim to uncover at this forum on May 22nd in Midtown, New York City, is to bring thought leaders, industry experts, and breakthrough companies that are at the forefront of this sector, which currently is experiencing a renaissance, as I mentioned. But we want to bring everyone together to get started and create a blueprint of sorts for where the energy sector is headed, driven in part, of course, by the needs for more data centers and AI technologies. Part of the event would show panelists, you know, driving very well thought out and very pivotal conversations. And attuned to that would also be presenting companies who are letting us in on what their progress is in terms of this nuclear energy sector and how they are really bringing innovative technologies and ideas to the forefront to really move this conversation forward. One of these companies is Maltex Energy. And with me, I have CEO Rory Sullivan. So just, you know, off the bat, Maltex Energy is currently undergoing a sales process, and it will bring the sales opportunity to a variety of public contenders, I believe, on May 7th. Rory, welcome. We're excited to uncover more about Maltex Energy, your involvement at the event. And if I've kind of just smoothed over, you know, the sales process, please feel free to dissect that a little more as we go along. Welcome.
Thank you. So yeah, Rory O'Sullivan, I lead Maltex Energy. Really excited to be here. We're developing a very innovative nuclear reactor that is really focused on reducing the legacy waste issue for America, Canada, and the whole world. So excited to dive in and talk more about it.
Excellent. So as a start, Maltex's stable salt reactor technology claims to be both safer and more cost-effective than traditional nuclear power. Can you explain the key innovations that enable these improvements, particularly how your design addresses historical safety concerns that have made the public wary of nuclear energy?
Yeah, sure. Maybe first of all, I'll start off explaining about conventional nuclear. So conventional nuclear power, all of the reactors in operation, they have small little pellets of nuclear fuel, uranium, that go into pins. So they line up these pellets and pins, and there's thousands of those pins in a reactor. And that's how the reactor works. They get hot, heats water, creates steam for electricity. These are excellent in normal operation. These uranium pellets are really good at withstanding very high pressures, but in normal operation, if they get a little too hot and they get a meltdown happens, and we've all seen this in the past in the 60s and 70s, there were accidents that led to a meltdown. Clever engineering has made this accident close to impossible. We've made nuclear power ultra safe. There's been thousands of years of operation with virtually no incident, and the incidents they have produced were essentially a success. They demonstrated that nuclear power was safe. There was no death from Fukushima and from Chernobyl. There will be less than 1,000 or low thousands of deaths. So this is clever engineering that has made this safe, but that comes at a cost. And that's why today's nuclear power is still relatively expensive. So give an example. What modern reactors have is they have dozens of safety systems that were not in the plants that were built in the 60s and 70s to get to this impeccable level of safety. And that's why in the 70s, they were low cost. And regulators today, they require four sets of these safety systems. And then in addition, the water pressure in the reactors is running at hundreds of bars of pressure. So this is about a foot thick of the highest grade stainless steel that you can manufacture. So all of this leads to an ultra safe power solution, but that comes at a high cost. So now coming on to what we've done to overcome this, we use, instead of these little uranium pellets, we use a liquid fuel salt in the same fuel pens. So essentially, we've eliminated the concept of that meltdown. We don't have an accident scenario that can lead to that big, you know, airborne radioactive release. We can have accidents can happen at the plant. There's lots of scenarios you can have accidents, but they're all small accidents that will impact the facility, not accidents that can impact the surrounding area or the people around. And so we don't need these dozens of safety systems. We don't need this foot of high-grade stainless steel. We can do it with about an inch or two. And so that's how we can really reduce the costs, is we keep the impeccable levels of safety, but we've eliminated the hazards, so you don't need the high cost to get to that level of safety. Little technical there, but I think it's kind of interesting, and I hope I've managed to convey that what we're trying to do to keep costs low.
No, absolutely interesting. And, you know, for the average person out there who may not know the details of the nuclear energy, et cetera, this is really helpful in understanding the traditional way of doing things and the major costs involved there, and then your liquid solution, if you know I can call it that, which does show a lot of promise in scaling down costs and being safer. Now, your company's recycling nuclear waste as fuel for the SSR-W reactor. I hope I said that correctly. How significant is this waste-to-energy approach in addressing both the existing nuclear waste problem and in making your technology more sustainable than traditional nuclear power?
Yeah, so this is what our customers are really interested in. So the second advantage of this liquid fuel or molten salt in fuel pin concept is we can tolerate, it's a very versatile fuel. So we can tolerate a lot in the fuel and the reactor will still operate safely. So what we do is we can take the existing waste used fuel that's currently stored at the reactor sites all around the world. We can process that in a fuel recycling facility and then reuse it in our reactor again. And so instead of putting that radioactive fuel in the ground where it'll be radioactive for 300,000 years, we can create more clean energy and reduce that waste. We're all familiar with Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared. Most of us don't know what it means. What it means is a little bit of matter can turn into a lot of energy. And that's what happens in this reaction. You're using that small amount of radioactive waste. And because the reactor is configured specifically to do this, we can literally convert that to energy. And instead of having long-lived waste at the end, we've got shorter, what's called intermediate level, low-level waste products at the end. So from what is, like, let's say there's 100 tons of that high-level waste, we can turn 95 tons of it into intermediate level waste. It's basically the same radiation levels as uranium as it comes out of the ground. So we're really purifying that used fuel, extracting out the small amount of long-lived waste products in there and using them as fuel. So the disposal volumes here can go down by about 3/4. That depends on the geology and the specific repository design in each country. But we don't see ourselves as a competing with the other small modular reactor and nuclear companies. We're really focused on this waste issue because the waste issue is not going away. It looks like we're very likely to have a tripling of nuclear in almost every major nation. Nuclear is going to be expanding because we need it. And we want to be the cleanup guys. We want to be the team that comes along and deals with the waste legacy issue so we can enable even more nuclear power on the grid to decarbonize and create a more secure energy supply.
Incredible. And it's really fascinating that off the bat, we are able, with this renaissance of the sector, to work in tandem with the demand and creating that solution to fuel and feed the demand, but also doing the recycling bit and not being on the back foot with that, as has been seen, you know, typically with developments that we have, industrial developments, and then, you know, realizing, oh my goodness, it's not great for the environment. What can we quickly do to retrack and renew or recycle or regenerate? And so I love that we are creating solutions in tandem with the renewable, recyclable, portion That's so important.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we're excited too. And it's actually one of the best attributes of nuclear power today is that the nuclear industry takes into account all of its waste products. No other industry does that. So although waste is seen as the Achilles heel of nuclear power, it's actually really the big advantage of nuclear power because we know how to deal with it. We have it costed into the all of the operational costs. There's liability funds to deal with it, and other sectors don't do that. In addition, now we can even improve that even further by recycling the waste. We have been working on this technology for quite a while, and just recently, at the early 2025, a couple of months ago, we announced the results of our major testing program to validate this recycling process. And so we've actually done years of testing with what's called synfuels, a surrogate fuel. And recently, we did about a $10 million program to validate the recycling process with real used fuel. It's very hard and expensive to do tests with really used fuel, but we're the only company doing these tests out there. And we've come up with this breakthrough process that has exceptional efficiencies of recycling. We're talking about 10 times better than anything else that's been done before. And what that's shown us is that, yes, we can make fuel for our own reactor, but we actually can make fuel for other reactor types now too. It's come out that efficient. And so we've pivoted our business model slightly so that we're first of all going to recycle used fuel and then sell fuel to whoever wants it, because there's a lot of different reactor vendors out there. And then in parallel, we'll be developing our reactor, which can also be a reactor that buys that fuel.
Definitely looking forward to watching this all unfold. Moving on, with the Canadian government supporting nuclear as part of the emissions reduction strategy, what specific regulatory challenges have you encountered during the vendor design review process? And how might these experiences inform global nuclear regulation as countries are seeking to meet climate goals?
Well, regulators, they're familiar with existing technology and they know that's safe. They know it can be operated reliably for long durations, and we know the failure modes, they're comfortable with it. And the working assumption is that if it's new and if it's a change, it's less good. A regulator needs to see one operating before they give approval to license it. And that's really a bit of a catch-22. We want to develop new, safer technologies, but the regulations have got so stringent over the years that it's almost come close to impossible to actually develop new, safer technologies because you have to have one operating to show it can work safely before you get a license to use it. And so what we've been doing is compiling a test program that is a large series of tests that replicates the different equipment and systems just like as close as possible to being in a reactor. And of course, you can do a lot with advanced simulations nowadays, but you still need real testing before you can get anything licensed. And for example, at Argonne National Lab, we have a large coolant loop that simulates the coolant going through the reactor. It simulates fuel assemblies going in and out for different accident scenarios. And so all of this leads to long regulatory timelines. And this is not helping energy security. It's not helping safer nuclear energy be deployed at scale. And so the priority is being able to test it as quickly as possible so that we can enable innovation. If we can't test, we just don't get innovation and we don't get improvement. I'm kind of relieved to see the US administration is very aggressively pursuing streamlined regulatory process. Just today, the day we're recording this, 29th of April, the Canadians have voted in a new Liberal government, and they have set a target of 2 years for a regulatory review. So policymakers have seen this issue, they're acting on it, and that's a big relief to me that we're going to be able to get through these processes faster. We don't need shortcuts, we need more streamlined processes.
100%. Definitely intriguing developments there in Canada. Now, the integration with renewables seems central to your strategy, particularly through the grid reserve thermal energy storage system. How does this technology specifically solve the intermittency problems of wind and solar? And what advantages does it offer over battery storage alternatives?
So when we were coming up with this concept quite a few years ago now, customers said they needed flexibility. Renewables were getting cheaper and cheaper and coming onto the grid at larger quantities. But that was creating greater problems with the grid. And customers then didn't see batteries at scale becoming a major part of that solution. And even today, the largest battery on Earth, which is the one they're building in Australia, can produce the same amount of power as an average nuclear power station for 20 minutes. So, and that's very, very expensive for that short duration. So it's just not going to solve the renewable intermittency. If you have wind down for a week, that's batteries are not going to cut it. So what we did was we'd see how could you use the energy from a nuclear power plant to provide that intermittency. So we have designed a grid reserve thermal energy storage system. So large tanks of molten salt, and the power, the heat from the reactor, which comes out as a molten salt, liquid salt, can be stored for, let's say, 16 hours a day, two-thirds of the day. And then we have our steam turbine that creates the electricity from heat. That can take the heat from two-thirds of the day in storage and the heat from the reactor for a third of the day to produce three times the power for a third of the day. So all nuclear power plants today run at a, basically full capacity factor, about 90%. What we've designed here by storing the heat is you can run a power plant at three times the capacity for shorter duration. So we're looking at a 500 megawatt reactor, but you can now run it as a 1500 megawatt power plant at a 33% capacity factor. And this is just very valuable on a grid because we see that alone is enough. If you have about a third of the grid with power plants like that, you could have two-thirds renewables, which would be an extremely reliable low-cost grid.
Wow. Looking at your timeline now for deployment in the early to mid 2030s, what do you see as the greatest challenges? Technical, regulatory, public perception? What could affect your ability to scale quickly enough to make a meaningful impact on global carbon emissions?
So we've had over $70 million invested by private or government institutions. But we've only been able to access about 40 million, maybe a bit more of that, as we needed further private investment to unlock some of the government grants, the government contributions rather. And so to date, the biggest challenge has been funding. We've had excellent technical SaaS, huge customer interest, and the ability to bring in the best talent. But this costs a lot of money, and as we talked about earlier, because of the regulatory timelines, it takes it's a long time. It's not easy, and we are on the most innovative end of the nuclear technologies, which comes with challenges. There's a lot more technical risks. There's a lot to do, but the benefits are commensurate. The benefits are very significant. When we were last out in the market, the financial environment for nuclear power was very different. So, we are currently going through a sale process. It's a relatively public process. There's bids accepted on May 7th. The agent is Hilco. And so I'm hopeful that the new owners will be able to pursue this. The objective is that new owners will be able to pursue this further. We may be out in the market looking for funding, depending on who those new owners are. But up to now, the biggest challenge has been funding. But yeah, the financial environment in nuclear has really changed. So I'm optimistic that'll improve. The need for nuclear is just growing and growing. The other big concerns with nuclear power in the past have been public perception. We really don't see that as an issue at all, particularly when we have we're focusing on this waste reduction. We've had very, very strong public reception. In New Brunswick, where we're looking at deploying our first reactor, where we have a site already ready to go, we have very strong public support. The First Nations there, the indigenous populations have invested in us because they back this, and that's typically been a major obstacle to projects in Canada. So a lot of opportunity. Some of the risks that have held us back in the past, like regulatory timelines, are slipping away, and we're excited to get new owners in place and get moving.
Wonderful. And enter Discovery Day, nuclear energy. in New York City on May 22nd. Do join us where you can uncover a lot more insights, not only for this company, but the industry in general. We'll have panelists, more presenting companies showcasing their amazing innovations, and really come through, pay attention, because you could have first move advantage in this renaissance of an era happening as we speak. I'm Carmel Fisher. Rory, thank you so much for joining me. Wonderful conversation, and you all stay tuned for more.
Brought to you as always by The Harvest Podcast, available anywhere you listen to podcasts.